Today's episode of the Open Pantry podcast is brought to you by me, Sean from Open Pantry Consulting. Make sure if you're opening a restaurant or starting to scale your restaurant that you come and check out what I'm doing at openpantryconsulting.com. Everything around operations analysis, recruitment, or data analytics. Everything to get your restaurant, cafe, or bakery on the better side of this crisis. Let's keep going with the show. Guys, welcome to another podcast. But before we get into it, I really want to talk to you about Restoke, which is a revolutionary back of house automation platform, which is purpose built for hospitality and developed with one core belief in mind. That is that time is a business owner's most valuable asset and it should be reclaimed using tech and data. And you know how much we've been talking about that over the last few months since the crisis of COVID. Tech and data is so important for hospitality owners moving forward. The Restoke team have set out to make sure that your restaurant runs smoother with better operations and an easy to use setup and platform that's beneficial for both single site and multi-location organizations. At the end of the podcast, tune in for a second little bit of this episode and we'll talk about how you can get Restoke in your venue with a special subscription offer. But for now, let's get into the program. Welcome to another episode of the Open Pantry podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in to another show. Today is a topic that is very close to my heart for a lot of reasons. The Bread and Butter Project is Australia's first social enterprise bakery. They invest 100% of their profits into training people seeking refuge and asylum in Australia to become qualified bakers. Since 2013, the Bread and Butter Project has provided training and employment pathways for refugees and asylum seekers to boost their prospects of successful resettlement, employment, and a strong sense of belonging. So I feel honored to get to spend the time with Philip Hoban, the GM of Bread and Butter Project. Thanks so much for joining me, Philip. How are you?
I'm good, Sean. Thank you very much for having us.
Oh, an absolute pleasure. And as I was just saying before the podcast started, obviously me being an ex-baker, anything to do with bread is a very exciting podcast for me to record. So it's fantastic to get to know you better and really understand what this social enterprise is about. So I'll call it a business, but how did the actual organization start out in 2013?
Yeah, I suppose it goes back a little further than 2013. In 2011, a guy called Paul Allam, one of the founders of Burke Street Bakery, and his partner, Jess Greenberg, they were over just on a holiday in the Thai Burma, in a small village called Mysot on the Thai Burma border. And they came across an orphanage that looked after refugee women. And when they were there, they noticed he had a big oven out the back, and with the okay from the sisters that looked after the orphanage, they actually trained a lot of the women to actually be bakers.
Wow.
And to bake bread in this big oven. And then they went and they found lots of sales from the local towns around, and they became self-sufficient. Up until that, they were very, very reliant on people helping out. So that bakery is still going today.
Wow, that's exciting.
They're making cookies now instead of bread, but yeah, they're self-sufficient. They look after themselves and they're helping many, many women. Paul came back to his own country in Australia and says, I'd love to do something similar over here. And with that, he had thoughts of helping lots of different groups of people, but they decided people seeking refuge and asylum was a good cause to help out. So they decided they'd set up a bakery. A wholesale bakery, Burke Street Bakery. They have their business and they set up a wholesale bakery. Called it the Bread and Butter Project. And in 2013, they launched that Bread and Butter Project and they brought in the 31st two trainees.
Yeah, that's exciting. And how did you become involved? Like, when did you come into the company?
I came into the company in 2018. I was lucky enough to move to Sydney, and this opportunity was presented to me. When I started, I have a commercial background. So when I started, I wasn't sure whether I'd be a right fit for the organization. But I fitted in very, very well. And I love what I do. I love the fact that we're helping people, and at the same time, helping ourselves as well, because it's great satisfaction to be gained from working from an organization that puts the money back into the organization and doesn't just try to make rich people richer.
Yeah. It's such a different path when you come out of for-profit businesses, I imagine, then, and go into a social enterprise organization. Like, was that a big sort of learning curve for yourself coming in as a GM a couple of years ago and sort of, I suppose, learning how to operate a business differently, do you think?
Absolutely was. I came here first, Sean, and I was charging along and I was flying through things, and I looked behind me and nobody was able to keep up. it's a different type of business with different challenges. But what you got to realize with social enterprises, they can only survive if they're commercially viable.
Yeah, of course.
And it's really, really important we get to a stage where we're self-sustained, and we're not there yet.
Yes.
And we're about 10% short of being a self-sustaining social enterprise who could then help other social enterprises through what we've learned. But you got to be commercially viable, and then that's part of the reason why they went looking for somebody with my background.
Yeah, for sure. I'm sure they're obviously very, very lucky to have you. Why did the brand sort of focus on bread production? Obviously, because of the connection with, you know, Bourke Street Bakery and that kind of stuff. Like, was there any thoughts that you know of to do any other sorts of hospitality ventures rather than a bakery production facility?
Yeah, there was two reasons to went for the bakery production facility. They're gifted bakers, the guys that founded Bourke Street. They're very, very gifted in what they do, and it's a specialized bread, artisan breads.
Yes, absolutely.
But secondly is there was forecasts of the substantial shortfall of skilled bakers in the industry throughout Australia, which meant it's one thing bringing in people to train them. It's another thing then finding employment. And our program trains them to be bakers. It's phenomenal in terms of the level it goes into. They understand ingredients. They understand the implications weather has on bacon. It's not just coming in and operating a machine, but we also get them a certificate too in food processing. And we do ESL tutoring. We have pro bono retired school teachers who fantastically leave up their time and come in and do one-on-one ES English as a second language training with the people. So we really set them up to succeed. But then we have to find a business that does open us in. So Bakers was one that worked really, really well because we had the experience.
Yes.
And we also knew there was a shortfall.
Yes. It's such a challenging industry. I mean, I spent a decade of my life, and I know even in the late 90s and early 2000s when I was still in the industry, how hard it was to get great talent who would want to work in the middle of the night to produce a product. You know, it's not a part of the industry I don't think you can understand until you do it. It's very much like, you know, being a chef, I'd imagine as well. Like, it's so different in the fact that you really, really, really have to have a love for the product and a love for what you're doing every day and sort of the rhythm of a bakery in order to make it work. Like, what kind of skills did you have to pull on from your sort of experience before this in order to sort of make sure this you know, social enterprise was going to be profitable and could sustain itself?
Yeah, I suppose acknowledging everything you said there is the first fact. It's a hard job to do. The errors are not glorious.
Yes.
It's manual. You go home tired every day, and no 2 days are the same.
Nope.
You come in and what you did yesterday will not work today.
Yes.
So it's acknowledging the work that has to get done. But the second part is acknowledging that all of the people seeking refuge in the sun that we take in, Sean, they have a phenomenal gifted background. They're really clever people.
Yes.
And they're underestimated because their skills aren't recognized over here, but they're not bakers.
Yes.
They don't come to us as bakers. They come to us as electrical technicians, maths teachers, IT specialists, constructional engineers. You know, they come with all that background, but then we put them into baking. So what we got to realize is we got to keep an eye and make sure they're happy at what they're doing.
Yes.
And find out is if they still want to be bakers when we're looking for work for them, because it's all part of what we want to do is get them used to the Australian workplace culture.
Yes, of course.
And get them that first step on the ladder, no different to the property ladder, the employment ladder.
Mm-hmm.
So if they don't want to be bakers at the end of this, we will try our best to find them other opportunities in hospitality or customer service or something that the skills we've given them will help them to start their careers off.
Yeah.
That's the biggest learning for me. In terms of everything else, it's just having the right people to train in them. Because bakers are like tradies, and tradies, you know, they're really good at what they do, but they're not always
great teachers.
So it's really important, and we're very, very lucky with the guys and girls we have working for us, that they're like that. You have the right behaviors, because every 6 months we say, well done with that group, here's another group.
Yes.
From scratch with limited English and no field experience, and they just work really hard. So they're the two real important things from my point of view. The rest, the business side, we just work as we go on.
Yeah. Do you find that you keep any of the, I'm going to call them graduates because I can't think of another word to sort of call them in that period of time.
That is
the word. Do you keep any of those people on as being trainers, you know, in the system, if that makes sense? Because I'd imagine that connection point with a person coming in fresh from wherever they're coming from as an asylum seeker, and then having this opportunity with you guys, getting great training, getting great support, and then actually delivering that consistently with other people coming through is actually a really big positive. Like, do you find you guys do that as an organization?
Yeah, we do when we need to. We like to send them out. We don't mind them coming back after they've experienced another place, because although we're a commercial bakery, we're a safe haven. They come with traumatic experience. They gradually build their safety net around us because they see we don't manage it like a commercial business in terms of they're just a number. We look after these guys as best we can. And we like to send them out to get more experience elsewhere. But the companies, the employment partners we work with, we make sure they have similar behaviors to us. And we'd like to send them off because we want them to get more experience. We don't mind them coming back after that.
Yes.
But absolutely, we do keep some. We have a need as well, particularly with our growth pattern and what we're doing with Harris Farm and with Woolworths Metro and with the bakery itself.
Yes.
We do have a need to keep some. And yes, they're great. We've one lady, her very first trainee, she's still with us, and she's like a mother figure to the guys that come in, guys and girls.
Yes.
She looks after them for the first few weeks, and it's great to have that kind of person there for their support.
Yeah, of course.
Because they're like deers in headlights at the start. They're just in a new environment. They've never worked in it. And it's really important they settle well.
Yeah. How do the people coming to work for you find out about it? Like, is it through other organizations? Is it there must be some connection points in order to get these people coming through the business?
Yeah, there's two ways. One is the friends of mm-hmm. people who have done it, mm-hmm. or they know about us through people who have done it. But we take them all through job active providers. They have to go through the job active providers who work to settle these guys in Australia when they come over first. And they stay with them until they're self-sufficient.
Yes.
And we reach out to 5 or 6 different job active providers every time we want to take a new intake.
Mm-hmm.
And they work with them, and they organize everything from safety shoes to interviews to getting them to site to see what we're like and all that.
Yeah. Is it tough as a business? I'd love to know, like, where a lot of the talented people coming into this business are coming from, like, country-wise. But, like...
Yep.
Thinking about different languages, and obviously ESL is a big thing with regards with this, I'd imagine. Like, how are you making sure that you're, you know, delivering the message properly, whether that be around safety or whether that be around recipes or just the expectations of the project? Like, you know, how have you sort of facilitated that? It must be a challenge.
It is, and that's one thing that disadvantages these guys when they come to Australia first and makes it really, really hard for them to find work.
Yeah.
Is their ability to understand safety and food safety and policies and procedures. Because OH&S and food safety are huge, understandably so. Mm. So when they come to us, we will accept them with a lot less English than commercial employers that, and we'd work with them through the ESL tutors, but they still need to have enough to be able to function. They need to be able to, when they're working on the mixing, read a recipe.
Yes.
They need to be able to understand when we're talking to them about policies and procedures, about safety and everything else and behaviors.
Yeah.
We need to know that that conversation can be understood. Mm. It'll take us longer, but we're okay with that.
Yeah.
And that's the difference between a social enterprise and a commercial business.
Yeah, exactly. Is that you actually keep working with them until they can understand. Yeah, correct. It's really critically important. So I suppose the second part of my question is like, where are a lot of these talented people coming from? Where are they seeking asylum from?
Yeah, it's really down to what we see in the news. They're coming from the countries, depending on what's happening there. I mean, we've had a lot of people from Syria and Iraq. We've had people from Afghanistan, Burma, and Myanmar. We've also had some from Bangladesh. So we'll read the Congo. It really depends at the time of the intake.
Yes.
Of where the troubles in the world are.
But
a lot of the people we have come from either Syria or Iraq.
Wow.
And they're phenomenal people. I mean, there's a couple working in our new concession on Metro and Park Sydney, and they were two that came through us.
Yes.
And then looking after that bakery. But they've, when you read the newspaper, it's not the same talking to somebody, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You get to see a human being, you get to see somebody you can laugh and joke, and also you get to realize how lucky you were, you know, and in terms of your upbringing and what you took for granted
compared to this guy. I can already tell by knowing your short time, Philip, that you're obviously a very humble character, but I imagine a situation like this would have made you even humbler to understand, you know, people's plight during this time. It must have been a very interesting experience coming in a couple of years ago and sort of and challenging yourself with this kind of role, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it was, Sean. And you know yourself, when you go home and work and the family say, "How was work?" And you go, "Yeah, it was okay, grand, no problem." But when I start coming home from the bread and butter project, you start telling the stories.
Yeah.
You know, I brought my kids in to meet the guys and family in to meet them and talk to them and understand that you have a PlayStation, you have a phone. Stop making things like that for granted.
Yeah, exactly.
It is very humbling.
Yeah. Is it, does the organization need to think about like what is happening outside of the lives of your staff as well, to make sure that, you know, if they're dealing with stuff from their homeland, which has obviously been a massive issue, that's obviously going to come into work. Like it's just going to happen. Especially, you know, when predominantly baking is done, you know, between midnight and sort of 6 or 7 AM. Right. So it's all darkness and stuff, which I found, you know, when I wasn't in the best spot, when I was baking, like feeling well, like, exacerbated that a bit, you know. Like how do you guys make sure you support your team outside, because I'm sure that's really important part of the project as well.
Yeah, and they're the additional costs that we actually incur as a social enterprises. We have a people in partnership. We don't call them HR, we don't call them we don't use terms like that, because they're like policing. It's, you know,
yes.
What I mean?
They're not
things we like to use. So we when I came here first, one of the board members says to me, "Just be careful, Philip. It's like Hotel California. You can never leave." And we find that with our trainees when they graduate and they go and find, and even when they're with us, we help them with everything from disputes they're having with the landlords to finding a new place to live, to talking to Sydney Transport about their Opel card not working, to dramas to having them with their own families, to writing resumes for them and helping them to do all that, set them up for interviews. It never stops. And we have a lot of phenomenal pro bono people who help us out with that as well, because we're a small, nimble team. We have to be, because we want to put all the cost into the training.
Yes.
So we rely on a lot of pro bono companies and very talented people to help us when we need help with that.
Yeah. Is it a challenge when the graduates come out and leave you guys and go into sort of a quote unquote normal employment? Like, to what kind of situations they're then going into if they go into hospitality? Like, is that is that a big culture shock for them coming into a really supported ecosystem for them by everything you've just explained, and then go into, you know, a normal job where they might not have anywhere near that kind of support? Is that a challenge for the graduates to come out of?
It is a challenge, but we've acknowledged that challenge as well, Sean, in terms of we get them into a placement before they accept the role.
So, that's very smart.
So what we try and do is understand what they are looking for, how close to home and how what transport they have. Because as you said, bakeries happen when transport doesn't work.
Yes.
You know, so and we take everything into context, and then we organize with the people looking to employ bakers at the time.
Mm-hmm.
We go out with the people. We do a little chat, not an interview, but a chat with the people in charge of this place. And then we put them in for a week. We get some feedback from them and also from the potential employers.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're happy, we finish the training with us and we transition them in. And what transition means is when their training is finished with us, they'll start working over there. But our people and partnership person will stay in contact with both the company and the trainee for as long as possible.
Yeah.
If it's going to be elongated time, because at the same time we're taking in the new lot, we'll get one of our pro bono people or ESL tutors whom they've worked with to stay in touch. Because most of the transition is around the English.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
We train them, we call it industry English, where we train them with the terminology to do with baking.
Mm-hmm.
We're never going to train someone in 6 months from the beginning. And these are all grown people. They're not kids.
Yes.
And they're very proud. So the challenge we normally have is continuing that English progression. So by staying close like that, we work and we're trying to build that partnership so it continues. We have graduated 45 trainees and we found employment for them all.
Wow.
And what we found is the intergenerational benefit was awesome, Sean, because all of the kids were either in full-time education or full-time employment. And when the last survey or research was done on this a couple of years ago by the government, there was only a 17% success rate with the government to achieve that. So we want to make sure we continue to support the guys and not forget them. And it's amazing when some of them left, the last intake in particular, they were actually crying when they were leaving.
Yeah, a bit.
You know, because they were leaving us. But we stayed in touch and we as I said, we find employment partners that have similar values to us.
Yeah.
You know, as the people grow.
What do you think are some of the sort of skills they get other than just baking bread in that period of time that really help them in their life in a new country, in their life in new employment after they've finished their graduation with you guys? Like what kind of values or, you know, skills do you think they gain from the time with you?
Yeah, I think they gain quite a few because, you know, a lot of them didn't even know what superannuation was.
Yeah.
A lot of them didn't understand the roster wasn't a guide. It was an actual time you got to get to work. Right?
Yeah.
They get to work and sometimes the people they work with are happy, sometimes they're grumpy.
Yes.
Depending on what's going on.
Mm.
Right. So they got to understand really the next best thing to understand the baking to the level they do is to understand people, to understand Australian work culture.
Yes.
And that you can be happy one day and the next day the same person has something else going on in their life and they're just not as happy.
Yeah.
But they also understand teamwork, the fact that they're not in it alone. They're surrounded by people who help, but they need to ask for that help.
Yes.
So they learned a lot of people skills in terms of how to survive in the workplace, because it's like a second family. It's the next amount of time you spend with people, with a set of people. That's
a family. Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I'm so humbled by this conversation. I apologize. Okay. I apologize for the long pauses. do you want to talk about the partnership with Woolworths that you know made me hear about you guys and how did that come about and what's that mean for the brand moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, timing is everything, and you know, you make your own luck, they say. Back before Christmas last year, Christmas 2019, we met up with Woolworths in the head office because we were trying to get some product on shelves in the future.
Yep.
And we were just talking, and talking goes on a while. But in March, when COVID hit, our business was decimated because over 70% of our business was hospitality, which is the
because you're doing wholesale
restaurants and the corporates in the city whose social responsibility partnered well with our cause in terms of what we do. And as we know, they all shut down. And we lost over 55% of our sales overnight.
Wow.
Our goal was to keep our 52 people employed because a lot of them weren't entitled to job seeker or job keeper.
Yeah, of course.
And we didn't even know whether we were at that stage, but thankfully we were. But we didn't want to let anyone go. We wanted to keep everyone working. So we reached out to the Metro team, the Woolworths Metro team. I rang phone call it was and says, we need some help. Can we get into some of your stores? And near enough overnight, they ranged us in 15 of their stores.
Wow.
And we're now in 25 of 26 of their stores, selling bread on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
And we were truly lucky that we got that partnership going then. And they helped us out. And since then, when they saw what we were capable of doing, the quality of the product and the synergies between their refugee program and ours, they wanted to look at that deeper. So they talked about what we could do together. And they were opening this new store in Park Sydney in Erskineville. Mm-hmm. And they asked us, would we be willing to partner with them? And we worked on many, many months to do that. And on the 4th of November, that store was launched. And in that store, we've put two of our graduates, our ex-Chinese. Both of them are from Iraq. One of them was a maths teacher. He was in his final year of college. And the other guy was an IT guy. And they're now running that bakery. And it's been a truly successful launch. But we would love people to continue to support us in there.
Yes.
Because we'd hope we could keep building our relationship with Metro into the future, because that gives us the opportunity. What does it do? It's not for us. I keep saying this. It's not about making lots and lots of money as profit. It's about making a surplus so we can train lots and lots more people. We get through 10 people through every 6 months.
Wow.
We would love to get 100 people through a year and then up that to 200.
Yes.
We want to make as much difference as possible, but we also want to, the importance of this relationship with Metro will hopefully help other social enterprises as well to understand you need a corporate partner. You know, we're not living in a world where corporate partners are necessarily going to go and seek you out.
Yes.
You got to knock on their doors and say, look what we do, look what you do.
Yeah.
And encourage them to support.
Yeah.
And we've been lucky with the Woolworths Metro team that's what's happened.
Yeah. Must be hard to have those, and tiring to have those, you know, constant conversations with corporate, you know, about trying to help a brand like yours. Like it's obvious the impact it's going to make, and maybe I'm just say it's obvious because I know what baking did for my life, but like it's it must be really tiring to continue to have conversations with corporate and hope they're going to support, you know, an enterprise like this. Like is that a challenge for you, Philip, or
it's not so much a challenge. It's like what you said about baking, right? You got to have a passion to do it, to get up
in
the middle of the night and work hard every night and then do this copy and paste the next night and the next night.
Yeah.
And it can be Christmas night as well, and it can be New Year's Eve.
Yep.
There's no days off for a baker. And it's the same with social enterprise. You got to have a passion. You got to believe, and you'll never stop trying them. Keep knocking on the doors. Your knuckles might get bloody from the amount of times you knock, but you just keep going because you truly believe in what you're doing.
Yeah, 100%. The new association with Woolworths Metro, just to understand that a bit more, are you controlling that whole bakery that would normally be done by Woolworths Metro themselves? So they're actually your staff, they're running it, it's all your product? Is that how it works?
Absolutely. Woolworths Metro, when he came to us, he says, we want you guys to have, this is a first for Woolworths Metro.
Wow.
The bakeries. They've never had an outside organization on the bakery in their store. And we've worked with them, and they've listened to us and listened to our head bakers in terms of the equipment, and they've supported 100%, right down to the magical slicer that we use.
Yes.
Where customers come in, they slice their own bread.
Oh, cool. I love that. Yes. Yes.
And we have our board are coming in every evening when we go home to continue to talk to customers and continue to show our gratitude. Because one thing we never take for granted is people's gratitude. And I know you said there, you know, it makes sense to me, but we never take that for granted. We continually are really grateful to everybody who supports the Bread and Butter Project.
Yeah. So what's the next sort of you know, 12 months, 24 months sort of look like for the brand? Like, you are you wanting to roll out in more, obviously, more Woolworths metros? Are you looking to create a retail space for yourself? Like, what's the thinking now that COVID is sort of becoming a bit more under control in Australia?
Yeah, what we learned in COVID is we had all our eggs in one basket and then nearly ended what we do. So what we want to do is we want to expand the amount of people we supply to, the amount of industries we supply to. So we want to grow our business in many different facets along the way. We would love to grow with the likes of a Woolworths Metro, and hopefully we can.
Yes.
That would be one thing we would aspire to do. But in terms of our business, we just want to sell as much bread as we can in Sydney at the moment. And with that comes the ability to train more and more people.
Yeah. Because your business is so much different to a normal for-profit business, because if you decided you wanted to go to Melbourne as well, you would have to think about all the support structures that you've built in Sydney and trying to replicate that in Victoria, because there's going to be different associations, there's going to be some federal government, there's going to be some state government, there's going to be a lot of different micro organisations, which I'm sure help you guys as well in Sydney. Like, that's a big challenge, you know, to do that. Like,
and that's where the corporate partnerships have to be strong, because the government, state, federal government will hopefully help.
Yes.
But, you can't be successful without having good partners in each state.
Yes.
Corporate partners to work with. So, our ambition is to grow and to help as many people throughout Australia as we can. People seeking refuge and asylum are the people we've targeted at the moment. Mm-hmm. And that's who we'll continue to help. And it's up to us to encourage businesses to get on their boat and join us. We want to grow. We want to grow nationally if we can eventually.
Yes.
But first we gotta reset ourselves in Sydney based on what's happened in COVID.
Yes.
And rebuild our sales both in wholesale and now in retail. And with that we are starting to hire people in respect of what we're trying to do in the future as well. So we're trying to get the right people in on board. And I would say what's really helped me personally over this COVID journey is the support of our phenomenal board.
Yeah. You look like you've got a great board. Generous. Like, you've got 10 great people on that board. It's amazing.
Yeah. And they give up any time you ask them. I ask them all to help us in Park Sydney, and they're out there without a question from 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock, just talking to customers on their behalf after doing their day job.
Wow. It's a great thing about something like this is it's – you just know the help it's actually going to provide people long term, and you know it's the kind of thing which is, I imagine, hard to get, a challenge to get government supporters in. There's a lot of great organisations, but and a lot of the time you don't see the result in the first 6 months. You know, this is a long term result that you guys are building to try to obviously make people's lives easier and better.
Yeah,
you know,
I mentioned the intergenerational, but we also have a milestone where we have a girl who came to us. She's originally from Syria. And we had a lad who was from Iraq.
Yes.
And they met in the bakery and they're now engaged to be married. Never would they have met had they not.
Yeah.
Had their paths not crossed, so to speak, because they were from two different countries, you know?
Yeah.
So that's our Posh and Becks, as we call them, of our bakery.
That's a fantastic way almost finish off the show, Philip. I want to ask you one final question before I let you go, if I can. I've been asking everyone at the final question of the podcast is, what's one thing that you're looking forward to getting back to yourself that you haven't been able to do sort of since COVID started?
Yeah, for me, it's meeting people again. Because we've been very, very careful in the bakery that we didn't want COVID to get inside our factory.
Yes, of course.
For a couple of days or spread through our workforce, because, I mean, we want to keep them all healthy and safe, and we want to keep the business healthy and safe. So just being able to, as leaders, we've been very mindful of what we've been doing.
Yes.
So we haven't been seeing as many people as in the past. And a lot of the people that I see are really, really passionate and want to help. And I love getting around people just to thank them and tell them what they're doing. And Zoom is great. You see people's heads, but, you know, you don't get to sit down, have a coffee. And
yeah, it's not the same, is it?
People. So I'm looking forward to getting out there and talking to people again about how they're helping and what we're up to.
Yeah. It's really exciting. I feel I can't think of the words. I just feel really lucky that you guys are doing something that's really, really good. And there's no doubt that it's going to expand, and I'm excited to see it expand, Philip. Now, we talked about donations. So what's the best way that people can find out about the Bread and Butter Project and how to donate to this amazing organization?
Yeah, we have on our website, thebreadandbutterproject.com, we have the ability for people to go through and go to a page to donate directly to the business.
Yes.
Or they can ring up the contact number on the website as well. Mm-hmm. And the girls will be able to help us from the office. But the website is the best place to go to get that information and be able to donate.
Cool. And as always, they're in the show notes of this podcast, so make sure you check it out and donate, as I will be doing today. Philip, thank you so much for your time. I really do appreciate it.
And thank you very much, Sean. Appreciate that.
All right, guys, I hope you really enjoyed that episode of the Open Pantry podcast. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. Now, as I was hinting at the start of the podcast, we were talking about Restoke, which is a fantastic back of house automation platform based here in Melbourne. Just fantastic piece of tech that's been developed last year. It's all about automating and delegating procedures and compliance, ordering and inventory management, prep runs, all those things at the back of the house, which we don't love to talk about, but we know as hospitality owners that are so, so critical to make sure that our venues run successfully. And on top of that, it has a live food costing system, which is just fantastic. I've seen it in person. Now, it's all about giving you the time to actually run your business much more effectively and see all these things live in your business when you're not there. So I know that's going to be really critically important as we rebuild this industry. Now, for the Open Pantry listeners, you're actually able to get 1 month free subscription on top of a normal 14 days trial. So that's about 6 weeks to use this platform and figure out if you actually like it. I know you actually will. So all you have to do is go to restoke.ai/theopenpantry. So that's restoke.ai/theopenpantry. Super easy. Check it out. You'll see everything you need to know about the platform itself. I know you're going to love it. And let me know what you think as well. Like, this is a fantastic product. I don't talk about products very much on the show, and these guys are just amazing what they're doing right now, so that's why I want to support them. So check it out and see what you think, and I'll talk to you on the next podcast.